their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Good to have you back with us today, and good to talk to you again, Rick. How's things going over on your side of town?
Oh, pretty well. It's been awfully cold recently. I don't think we talked about that in the last podcast.
I stayed inside. It was negative 15.
Weather across the country, but it's been cold again recently.
Yeah, it was negative 15 at my house in the Fahrenheit, which is cold no matter where you take it. That, but it's better now. It's sun is out at least, so it's you know, winter was finally due. We were kind of ready for it, but I haven't been out shooting much. And you know, even though I like the snow, I don't want to drive in it. So I kind of give it a day or two to clear out before I face that challenge again. But anyway, so let's see, where were we on things? We're going to talk about some cool stuff, and we want to talk this week about the sort of the evolution of eye detection focus, which is this great feature that's been slowly rolling out. And the reason we're bringing it up today is because it's one of the features that Nikon appears to be really trying to improve in their Mark II line, if you will, of Z6II, Z7II. And they just had a firmware update just the other day that specifically addresses improvements in eye detection focus. And so that's something that so we thought we'd talk about it more of in a general sense as well.
And I was able to do some experiments with the new firmware update and compare it to what existed before. And we'll talk a little bit about that, some practical stuff.
Yeah, nice.
I'm not going to say it's ultra scientific, but I feel pretty confident in the results.
But if you can have some general conclusions that, you know, feel that make you, that aren't just psychologically driven, then it's always a good thing.
Right. It's always funny about firmware updates. You always see all these posts on the internet. Oh, despite the fact that there were no improvements, it's suddenly magical again. And
right.
it's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, despite the fact that they didn't mention any improvements to autofocus, suddenly my camera focus is better, right? I mean, but this particular firmware upgrade, they did actually mention specifically improving the autofocus algorithms in the Z6 and 2 and the Z7 2. But before
the other is kind of an imaginary placebo effect, not a placebo effect, but an imaginary one.
There you go. Before we dive into that, though, we do have a processing tip, and we were calling it Lightroom tips, although this week we're going to give you a tip that really applies to more than just Lightroom. It can be any processing software that offers localized adjustments like gradients or brushes or whatever. And this has to do with adjusting highlights. And it's very tempting when you get an image to just crank the highlight slider all the way to the left to recover highlights.
Yeah, it could be a bright sky, some portion of the image that's just much brighter. Mm-hmm. And you want to get some detail back, and so you crank it down, but you don't necessarily look at everything it's doing in the other portions of the image, right?
Exactly. And I think a sky is probably the classic example, right, where you have the bright sky and you want to recover highlights in the clouds because, you know, maybe it's a little bit pushed off to the right. So you crank that highlight slider down, and then you end up with an image that looks a little dull overall, looks a little flat.
The sky could look good, but you can take all the sparkle out of other portions of the image. Could be, you know, bright specular highlights on rocks, which can be nice and look good, but you end up zapping all of those. And the worst thing about it is I think a lot of people just will grab that slider and pull it down and not really look carefully at what it really did to the rest of your image.
Well, you know, and in fact, there is a certain school of processing thought where some people just apply immediate, they just have like almost a preset where it sets highlights to minus 100 and shadows to plus 100.
Wow.
You know, it just automatically do this on every image. Now, and I get the mentality of doing that, but it's not meant to be a final step. If you're going to do adjustments like that globally, then it's intended to set your overall contrast to a, you know, highlights and shadows to a place, but then it's up to you as the photographer to put back the highlights and shadows, you know, to darken or brighten them in other places of the image, you know. So there's that, you know, sort of post hoc approach where you mm-hmm. crank the global sliders down, and then it is incumbent upon you to then make the necessary local adjustments. Or the flip side of it, like your image with the sky, there's another way to treat that, right? And that would just be starting with a localized adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Could be using the gradient function, which I think is in most raw editing packages. It could be using a really large brush with auto detect on the sky. You know, just a variety of ways of doing it. And it's pretty easy, frankly. It's not like it's this painstaking exercise.
And then you recover the highlights where they need to be recovered, and you don't make the rest of your image flat. And it's about balancing that. And, you know, the reality is this is true with a lot of adjustments, not just the highlights. But I think we wanted to bring this one up because excessive highlight recovery can lead to some sort of uninspiring looking images that lack pop, you know. Right. And so I think that's a good tip. So if you don't know how to use those local tools, you know, you want to brush up on that. Go, no pun intended, you know, go figure out where the gradient tools live in your editor. So, for example, in Lightroom, those tools are in the develop module underneath the histogram. You can click on the little radial gradient or the linear gradient or the brush, and then you get those slider adjustments that come up. So go find those, play with that, because I think you'll end up with, I think we both think that that's, I mean, this is how we approach our photos most of the time. Mm-hmm. In that the idea that a global adjustment is never going to get you to the finished product, you know, with a majority of images. So there's always room to make it better. Cool. So let's move on and discuss this idea of eye detect focus, because this has sort of been evolving for a while now. And it's it's mostly a feature of mirrorless cameras, although there's some exceptions with DSLRs where if you use their live view mode, you can sometimes get eye detection. But it really requires either a mirrorless camera or a setting like live view where your mirror is raised on your DSLR, and it may do some detection. You know, because the DSLRs will do it, but not usually the fancy eye detection and not real time in the viewfinder. You can just kind of, you know, you can do some stuff. It's not a feature that is new. It's just been evolving for a really long time. I mean, Nikon's had face detection in DSLRs as an option for a long time. It's just you don't get that visual feedback to know that it's doing its thing until you reveal it. Right. And you could look at your images and someone would have squares around the faces when you use auto area focus mode. So
if I were going to describe globally, and this isn't Nikon specific, it's more the market in general. Mm-hmm. What I would say is that, you know, the starting point was the face detection. Mm-hmm. You were talking about, and there were benefits to that, and it worked pretty well, especially if you were stopped down a little and fairly close. And then it moved into eye detection at closer range, including things like picking up which eye was closer, which is something that typically you like for portraits. And then it's evolved into eye detection at greater distances. Mm-hmm. You know, think of a shot where you're not talking about portraits, but more people in a group setting or at a distance, including, you know, action stuff of differing types. And then in recent years, it's branched to include eye detect for animals, dogs Correct. And cats, and in some cases, birds and other things. And of course, you know, the human eye detect and the animal eye detect, those things are, you know, kind of blur a little bit with certain animals. So they work more than you would think, just mm-hmm. not always. But it's an interesting progression, and it's actually a pretty cool feature, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of those features that if you haven't tried it, you know, depending on what camera you have, you want to, you need to figure out not only where to enable it, because in some cases it only activates in certain focus area modes. You know, different cameras, different settings, and then see what it does. Because, you know, as with all things that are sort of AI auto detecting things, they're not 100% foolproof. So you want to know the situations in which you can use that with the camera that you have, because if you want it to be reliable. That's what I've struggled with sometimes. As you get farther away from your subject, does it pick the right subject? How does it know to go between a face and an eye? Like, how close do you have to be? I'm used to the Nikon paradigm, where you can turn face detection on or eye detection on. And with eye detection on, it's both, right? So then if it doesn't detect an eye, it will still try to detect a face. Mm-hmm. And it will kind of go back and forth. But then you can drive yourself nuts trying to make sure it selects the right face, you know, the right eye.
Right.
You know, that can be a real challenge. So you gotta be willing to make those trade-offs of when it works and when it doesn't work. But this was something that, you know, I mean, it can be great, and it can be fooled. And you know, when there are situations where it doesn't always work, and those usually involve, you know, the kind of subject that you have or the distance, right? Because I know you had some challenges when you were playing around when we were testing that 50 millimeter 1.2, you were running right. into some challenges with bangs, you know, your wife had hair, right? I mean, that was,
and she had what I would call COVID bangs at the time.
Oh yeah, you know, it's it's a common problem these days. And so what was happening, like, it didn't focus on the eye, or did it focus on the hair, or what, or did it just not want to focus? What
was happening? I was probably getting only about a 30% hit rate.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, which was a bit disappointing, you know. And I was shooting wide open, because that's one of the things that right. we were looking at with that sure. lens. But, you know, it was having a problem with her bangs going between the eyes and eyebrows. I think, you know, a variety of things that are probably factors in the eye detect algorithm, but they were the wrong things to focus on. And, you know, so it was just a little bit frustrating. And then the other experience I'll just share is, you know, one of the lenses I've got is an F-mount 105 1.4 lens, which is a really nice lens, especially for portraits. Mm-hmm. But what I found was that using that lens with eye detect, which is something you would really like to work well, was similarly unreliable. It was hunting around a lot, and so I got a lot of variation in mm-hmm. the focus.
And that was on your Z7.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So, that falls under the category of test, you know, trust but verify, and certainly make sure you know what you're doing before you show up to a wedding. And, you know, if you've got a situation where you're not able to get good eye detection for whatever reason, maybe it's the lens, maybe it's the lighting, you know, or your distance, you know, then there is a workaround, right?
Sure. You know, just the key thing is, you know, use one of the smaller focusing patterns where you could put it on an eye and not have it spanning the rest of the face and picking up ears and all sorts of stuff. So getting down to just the area with the eye. And if you do that, it's not bad at closer distances. It's not going to track, you know, if your subject is moving.
Right.
But
this
for
a single point.
Yeah, for a portrait, it's not a crazy thing. It works fairly well. So don't view it as you have to have this or you can't shoot portraits. Certainly not the case. But right. I will just say that prior implementations put me on the borderline of do I use it or not for certain mm-hmm. lenses.
Right. Because when it works and works correctly, what's wonderful about it is that you can focus, focus, that's the wrong word. You can concentrate on your composition and know that the camera is going to keep the focus point locked on your subject's eye. You don't have to do the focus, recompose, shoot thing. You don't have, you know, it's going to be right there. And so you can, because I have this problem when I'm shooting portraits we talked about before, where in the traditional way, I'm using something like single point focus. Mm-hmm. And you try to put that, you know, so then you find yourself, you're moving the focus point around in the screen, or I find that because I'm not using or you're bullseyeing things with the center point, and my compositions end up getting off. And with face and eye detect working, I can concentrate more on getting the composition and the backgrounds right, and know that the camera is going to get the eye in focus. I don't have to worry about it.
Very important point. Completely agree. It lessens the likelihood of silly looking bullseyed compositions.
Or just off center. I just get them off crop, one shoulder is out of the frame. I just do this all the time and, you know, I should pay more attention to it, but it makes it easier, I would say, to pay attention to your backgrounds and compositions when you don't have to think so hard about the focusing point, provided that you trust it. I mean, and this is the thing, right? It's does it work?
And I'll just give an example of something where it was really nice. I was photographing a group of dancers. And so they were at a little bit of a distance and they were moving around. And I could put the eye detect on one in particular, shoot wide open. I was shooting with an 85-1.8 lens. And man, it just tracked, you know, across the frame. And like you said, I could keep an eye on the composition more because I wasn't mm-hmm. trying to chase the subject with a cursor. So it really can be a nice thing. Although I don't care about video a lot, it can be absolutely wonderful for video.
Yeah, video especially, I've played with it. And, you know, I have this silly little YouTube channel where I post the occasional videos or unboxing, you know, people like, don't ask me why people like those. But anyway.
I don't know either.
But if you wanted to watch me opening the 51-2 lens, I have an unboxing video of that you can just enjoy until whatever, right?
But yeah, don't feel bad if I never watch it.
I do not feel bad at all. But one of the things I was doing in the past was when I was using videos, I was deliberately choosing my old Nikon 1V2 mirrorless for video for that very reason, mm-hmm. is that it would focus on my face and I didn't have to worry about trying to do things, and I could get better quality video than I would get with, say, my phone at the time. I mean, and better, you know, shallower depth of field and all these other things. And it would track a face, so I could set the camera up on a tripod and turn it on. I didn't have to worry about having someone in the room to track my focus, you know, or mm-hmm. to you know. And if I moved a little bit, it was okay. You know, so for video, it's potentially, you know, a major game changer, because again, it allows you to focus on other elements of stuff, like the composition and framing, instead of always getting that tunnel vision on your subject.
Right.
Now, I want to bring up, so we were talking about testing, and we were testing those stuff. That was with the Z7, but you know, at the end of last year, Nikon comes out with the Z6 II and the Z7 II, and one of the things they mentioned as a feature was, you know, the second processor to help improve autofocus performance, you know, second chip, if you will. So dual processors. And what it meant was that those kinds of things that were very algorithm dependent, things like subject tracking or eye detection, theoretically would not only be better, but have the chance to get improved upon even more in future firmware updates. So Z7.2 comes out, and then just this week they updated the firmware to it. And you had a chance to mess with this, so tell us what you saw.
Yeah, so one of the advertised features was one of the things that we were talking about earlier, which is picking up the eyes and being able to accurately focus on them from a greater distance. Not just really close, like you would for a classic portrait. And so I did some test shots with my poor wife helping. She was very nice about it. Indoors, since we had snow all over the place, which also meant the lighting levels were lower, which I think is important. So this was a test done indoors at lower light levels. And it was interesting trying both the Z7 and the Z7.2 with the exact same lens and seeing what happened. I tried the Z7.2 first, and you know, just at a greater than portrait distance with a 51.8, and it worked remarkably well. You know, tracked all over the place. I wasn't having her move around rapidly, but I was moving the camera around rapidly to simulate movement, and it tracked really well. Sometimes I could see a little bit of lag with the focusing indicators in the viewfinder, but the actual results were in focus consistently, which was great. And then I backed up further, and it kept tracking the eyes. And I actually ran out of space indoors. I could not back up far enough away to have it switch to face detect, which was pretty glorious. And then I tried switching to the Z7, and I came much, much closer. In fact, closer than I was at for those initial Z7.2 shots, and I couldn't even get eye detect to work. It was just face detect. And then I had to move in considerably closer. So I'm not sure how much further out the eye detect was working, certainly at least double the distance, maybe more like triple. It was astonishing. But those are very unscientific results.
Yeah.
Bottom but line I was, it worked damn well.
And it would indicate, I mean, my guess is that with the 7.2 that your keeper rate would have just been much, much better. Because it would be focusing on eyeballs instead of you know, eyebrows. You know, that's
I would say it was nearly 100%.
Wow, that's really great.
Just a little bit under that, but not much.
And did you see any noticeable change when you updated the firmware? This was with the firmware update. I mean, I mean, just I was just curious.
Yeah, but the only reason I'm pausing is I'm not going to say I did an ultra scientific.
No. But I bring it up because, as we said at the top of the show, this is a feature that Nikon specifically mentioned. And I think it goes to say that, you know, unfortunately, the previous generation Z bodies don't have the necessary processing technology to get the benefits of these newer firmware updates. That's just where it is. And while we're not saying run out and buy a Z6 or 7.2, it does tell you that they have, you know, some of those initial questions when we first saw the specs of these cameras, and we said, well, you know, that's probably a good thing, but not sure. But it sounds like from your, and I know you don't do a ton of portrait photography, but if you're doing more portrait work, the advantage of these new camera, the Mark IIs, the becomes apparent pretty quickly.
Because
I know for a fact that when my, you know, when I've used my Z7 and I have it in face detect mode and not eye detect, even eye detect, it can miss sometimes, but in face detect mode, it's more likely to focus on an eyebrow or a nose rather than the actual eyeball itself. And that's okay if I'm shooting at F4, but if I'm shooting at F1.8, it's noticeably soft on the eye, and that can be a problem.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, that becomes very, very pleasing. So what do you do? You know, what is, you know, how important is this to you as a feature if you don't have that feature, or if you have an older camera? What are we telling people? It's like, you know, go out and spend money, right? But
Yeah, I obviously we survived without it, right? So the absence of it can't be too traumatic. It is one of those things where once you've used it a little bit, you start appreciating it more and more and using it more frequently. And one of the things I should mention with the tests I did, I also did tests where I had my wife gradually look away until the point where she was completely facing away and just seeing what its behavior was. And I wasn't using the smaller focusing zone to try to steer it toward a certain area. I was having it do eye detection across the entire frame, which I think would be a little bit harder. It didn't seem to matter. But when she turned her head, it just like you would hope, it switched from eye detect to what I would call head detect, because it wasn't face detect, but it stayed on her. So it didn't try to go to some silly place in the rest of the image. It did what you want it to do. And that would be important if you were photographing action of some sort, like the dancers I mentioned.
I was just having this thought to I've had that experience where the camera suddenly decides things that look like faces and it detects them, even though they aren't. They're inanimate objects, but it decides it's a face for some reason. I'll see face detect kick in. It was like, what are you doing here? So no, that's interesting, and it's good to know that the technology really is better, because there's not a lot of reports out from playing around with some of these new cameras as to, other than anecdotal reports of it seems better. It seems, this is nice to know that you definitely are
Like
getting.
this was clear.
Yeah, so that's
This
good.
was very clear,
Well, excellent.
especially if you compare it against the older body. Super, super clear. And like I
So.
said, although the animal I detect is advertised as just being cats and dogs, you can pick up more things. I've experimented at the zoo with it, and things like meerkats, those tend to be easy. Some of it has to do with lighting. Do you get specular highlights in the eyes? I think that helps. But in terms of, is it something that people go out and spend a lot of money on to get? They're the best able to decide that. If you did a huge amount of portrait photography where you're not in a studio and it's a little bit more mobile and there's more action, it's a very nice feature.
Well,
I'm very happy to have it. Let me put it this way.
I'm thinking that event photographers and probably wedding photographers would really like this feature.
I think they could.
I mean, that would be where I would see it, because you don't have a chance to wait around. You want your camera to be focusing on the right thing. But as with all things, test them before you go out there and get a paid gig. Make sure you know the behavior of your particular camera. So, well, that's good. And thanks for, I'm glad you were able to test that. So,
And hopefully we'll see further improvements. The things that would make sense for Nikon to do, expand the wildlife that their algorithms will work well with. That's one of the biggest ones,
Oh
in
yeah,
my
I would love
opinion.
that. I would like that a lot. So, okay. Well, we'll keep our wish list open. If you've got suggestions for show topics out there for us, you know where to find us is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/imagedoctors. And we will see you all again in next week. Happy shooting.
All right, bye-bye.